Welcome to the GeoMob Podcast, where we discuss geo-innovation in any and all forms, whether for fun or profit. Hi, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the GeoMob Podcast. My guest today is Harald Reber, and he is one of the co-founders of a company called Atlas, which bills itself as an all-in-one map builder. Atlas kind of popped up on my radar last week or so when they, maybe 2 weeks ago, when they announced their funding round, a $2 million funding round. So I took a look at the product, looks very interesting, has some interesting new twists on kind of map making. So I thought it would be great if we get someone from the company here to tell us about that and what they're up to. Harald, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
What is Atlas, and who are you? What's your role in the company? And give us the quick elevator pitch for Atlas before we get into the details.
Okay, thank you very much for having me, Ed. Atlas is a full stack mapping company. That's how we think about it. So we want to do everything from data management to visualization. And we want you to create a world where if you want to create a map, you think about Atlas and you go into Atlas and that's where you create your map. And it shouldn't matter if you are an urbanist or if you work in a renewable company or whatever you do, you should think about Atlas when you think about mapping.
And this is a web-based software, if I understand correctly. So it's not a desktop-based software.
Yeah, everything is web-based.
Okay. And your role there, give us some brief stats of the company beyond just the fact that you just raised a couple million dollars.
Yeah, so I'm the CTO, started the company together with three other co-founders. Then we were super lucky to get some fantastic engineers on board, and now we're hiring more because we raised some money. So,
Congrats. And you guys are based in Norway. I believe you're our first Norwegian guest here on the show. So
okay, that's very cool.
So we'll at the end, maybe after we go through Atlas, we'll talk a bit about the kind of Norwegian tech and geo scene. So, all right. Well, so tell us the story first of all for Atlas. Obviously there are many map making systems of different types, each I guess with pros and cons. So what prompted you to build a new one?
So we actually gathered a team to start a company because we wanted to accelerate how renewable energy is built. We wanted to build to enable companies to build solar farms, wind farms a lot quicker. And we had been working a lot with GIS in our studies from before. And what we saw was that typically companies, they would send data to a consultant and they would work on it for 2 weeks and send the data back and it would be in a PDF. And the entire thing was very manual. So we started automizing a lot of this for renewables, automizing the process of finding the perfect sites. And what we saw was that it wasn't all the renewable companies that had trouble with non-technical people trying to do map making, sending data back and forth, knowing what the one source of truth for the data was. All of these problems also applied to real estate. It applied to municipalities that didn't have a proper geo stack going on. And we just saw this huge land of opportunity emerge in front of us. And we were like, we can do a real difference here. And that's when we really put our foot on the pedal. And from then, we just kind of worked away of trying to make the modern mapping solution.
So what makes Atlas different? And what I mean is, obviously, these people that you were working with, the municipalities and things, obviously, they had, I assume they were using things like Esri tools or maybe QGIS or obviously there are other services online to build a map. What's the differentiator? Why would they prefer Atlas?
Because we have seen that in a lot of these companies, typically you have mostly non-technical people or you don't have that many GIS specialists. So it's very hard. They typically have a lot of stuff to do all of the time. And we want non-technical people to be able to do a lot of the stuff that only GIS technical people are able to do today. And also, it's very difficult for non-technical and technical people to interact because they don't work in the same platform. So a non-technical person wouldn't go into a QGIS product and or project and try to fix the styling, for example, because it's not exactly what they want to show in the final map. So they will have to have this back and forth dialogue and screenshots and do all this stuff. But in our platform, they can just go straight in and fix it. And it's in a super simple interface compared to what's coming before.
Yeah, so I completely agree with you that, let's say, the traditional tools, be it QGIS, be it proprietary tools like Esri, they are very complicated, right? I mean, it's easy to get lost in all the sub-menus and things. But the reason they're so complicated is because they're also very powerful, right? And so how do you blend, you know, everyone thinks themselves, oh, this could be a lot simpler. But then when you actually get into trying to make a map, you're like, oh, I just want to change this one thing. And then you're like, oh, I need that tool. And then that needs that tool. And they're like, oh, no, now can we change it to that? And, you know, very quickly, it's complicated again. So how do you solve that? How do you take that problem on?
Yeah, absolutely. And I would also like to say that we really like QGIS too. We think it's a fantastic software, and we think it's fantastic that an open source software can be that powerful. And I think there will always be a place in QGIS and Esri products in the world. So, but we also think that for a lot of stuff, if you just want to see, check out some zones around your house that how close you are to the subway, for example, and find out if you want to purchase a new house based upon that information, you don't really need very advanced analysis tools. And we also think that a lot of the QGIS packaging is insanely complex. Just look at how hard it is to add the layer. Like, if you're not an expert, you don't know what an XYZ or a VMS layer or what the different file types are, any of these things. And you just want to get the data straight into the platform. You don't even want to worry about CRS, right? You just want to get it straight into the map. So there's a lot of places where, yeah, sure, you need complexity, but the complexity is way too high, in our opinion.
Okay. And so what stage is the business in now? You have a working product, or it's kind of a version one, and people are using it, and customers, or where exactly are you?
Yeah, so we have a version one product, and we have customers within real estate, renewables, we have urbanists, we have some municipalities. I think we had users from 140 different countries. So okay, we have quite a varied crowd using the product, and that's what we want to, just because we think we're just on the beginning of this path of making a proper full stack GIS product. And we need to make sure that it fits everybody, because our vision is to make to work towards GIS 2.0, right? So we can't only work with municipalities or renewables, or because then it won't be the correct product.
One of the, you know, I looked at the site a bit. I have to admit, I've not logged in and actually used the product. But one of the aspects that I think looked most interesting was the kind of real-time online collaboration, you know, which is, you know, like people are familiar with probably something like Google Docs or something like that, I'm guessing. So can you tell us a bit about that feature and how it's being used? Because I see that could actually be quite a differentiator versus something like a QGIS or the other traditional kind of just, you know, desktop-based tools.
Yeah, absolutely. So actually, just to tie that back to kind of where we started. So one of the first things we saw within Geo was that non-technical people and technical people typically worked, their interaction surface was typically mail. So they would send files back and forth and send versions of a project back and forth. Right. And we were like, this is insanity. How do you know what the latest version is? This is not the best way to do it at all. So just being able to upload files into a shared project and then work on it together there was a game changer for a lot of customers. And then additionally, being able to talk over Google Chat, for example, and just be like, oh, can you check out the tree I'm highlighting right now? What the status is? And being able to see a cursor and just highlighting that tree. Those things too are like something they just haven't seen before. And this is kind of like what we're trying to do with GIS in general, just like I think a lot of the time we look at what has other successful companies done that has done similar things in other industries, like what Figma did within design. And we're like, multiplayer mode, that's a fantastic feature. And we want the JS people to have it, so we should build it. And yeah, that's how we think about it most of the time.
Very cool. So who kind of is the customer audience? Is this, I guess you're targeted more like not at the hardcore GIS people who feel comfortable going into QGIS and or others, but rather more like it's for more like collaborating with their customers, let's say, or like the project owner who might not be as technical. Is that kind of your target group?
Yeah, so it's actually quite varied, but it tends to be people that are technical, but are not necessarily from the GIS world. So it might be somebody that wants to do automation within GIS, and they know how to write a couple of Python scripts, but they don't necessarily have a background in cartography or GIS or something, and they want to enable the team. So we've seen that typically it's team leaders in companies that's just kind of look at their processes and are just seeing that they're too inefficient and that everything is, they can't do what they would like to do within their org, and they're trying to find tools that are more efficient.
Okay. And what is the business model around all this? How does it work? I pay to become an online user, is that it?
Yeah, as simple as possible. So we have a freemium model where you can go check it out for free and you can try it for, I think we have 2 month trial, 1 month trial, don't quote me on that, but something like that. And after that, we have a flat fee. So we try to just keep it as simple as possible and as accessible as possible too.
And what has the response been from the market so far? How are people liking it?
I think it's been great. And also the price point, I think, is people have been very happy about it just because they're used to kind of exorbitant fees from Esri, in my opinion. And also a thing where I think Esri very often has some interesting pricing tiers where I don't understand necessarily why certain features are within the same bundle, because it often forces people to buy multiple bundles or go into a very expensive bundle when they really shouldn't. And we're just trying to be a bit more reasonable and sensible and make it simpler, to be honest.
Gotcha. This gets to a very interesting point. If we take a step back and not just look at Atlas, over the last couple of years, we've seen many new entrants in the space, all kind of around the theme of making it simpler to make maps. And these range from, things targeting consumers to things, much more like what you're working on, targeting kind of professionals and the people they collaborate with, and all different models from, online or purely just mobile for people in the field. And we've had several of these people here on the show or speaking at the different events, but, what's your impression of that? I assume, are you looking at all the other players in this space? I mean, a very famous one, of course, is Felt that entered the market about, I guess, 2-3 years ago with a lot of noise, a lot of funding. But lots of others as well. I mean, bootstrapped ones, small ones. Give us your take on all that.
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's starting to emerge a lot of great tools. Say, for example, Felt. I think they have some fantastic visualizations, and I think that's really cool. I think what we have seen ourselves is that the open source community and kind of the tools that we build upon has become so much better within the last 20 years and even within the last 5, right? So, for example, right now you have DuckDB making waves, and you're seeing improvements, a lot of improvements within PostGIS and within Postgres in general. And you're seeing this emergence of vector tiles, and there's so much stuff going on that lets you build more advanced platforms around it. So sometimes I'm just very grateful that I live right now, because I don't think it would be possible for us to do the same as we do like 10 years ago. Even something like the data centers would be a limitation back then. So
No, you're definitely right. I feel like since COVID, so let's say last 3, 4, 5 years, we have kind of hit a new level of innovation and on all the fronts that you talk about, all the different map rendering tools, more and more data. You know, the data has finally arrived. OpenStreetMap, open addresses, Overture. Now there's more and more data, and a new kind of a new generation of tools is coming out. And frankly, I mean, it's a bit overwhelming at times because it's just too much to stay on top of. On the one hand, this is very cool. On the other hand, I think it makes life very, very difficult for people like yourselves who are trying to build a tool that's simple, and how to keep it simple, and how to hide that complexity from the end user. How do you guys approach that?
Honestly, I think it's all about the user interface, and you need to think very deeply about what you can strip and what you can't strip. And that can be surprisingly hard. So say, for example, a simple analysis like buffering a line string or a point or a polygon or something. If you look at something like QGIS, you have tons of options, like what do you want the end join to be like? Do you want it to be a meter or round? Or do you want like all of these options? And then just thinking about what's relevant, should we maybe have like an advanced tab here where you can go in and set like the more granular settings if you need that? Or should we just keep it plain simple and just have one box that just says how many meters you want to buffer it by? So it's kind of like there's the constant trade-offs, and it's a constant need to have people that think deeply about products and how to make it more accessible and nice, because we could have 500 options just in the buffer analysis, but we want to strip it down and make it simple, so we can't. And it's these debates we're constantly having within Atlas, and I think that's what makes it so fun too.
It's so challenging. And actually, of course, one approach. Obviously, we're speaking here in late 2024, so I need to ask you about AI. We've seen several new entrants over the last year or two trying to use AI to help in the, let's say, the GIS process. So everything from that the user can just kind of type in words what it is they're trying to make a map of, and try to create that. With varying degrees of success, sometimes seems to work perfectly, sometimes not really. But what's your take on that? Is that an area you're exploring or not? Or how do you view that?
Yes, absolutely. I think you need to stay on top of AI if you're building a modern product. And of course, it's become a bit of a cliche, but it's also, it's a reason it's a cliche. It's because it is very important. And we use AI for a lot of different things. What I would say is that I think in the future, you will be surprised what you can do with a chat box when it comes to making a map. I think there's a lot of interesting things that you're going to be able to do that you wouldn't think were possible. We actually do a lot of stuff right now where it comes to just like making the data better, where it's like you can scan through a document and remove wrong words in a CSV, or extrapolate and make new columns and do all of this stuff. But I think it's just the tip of the iceberg. And I think we haven't, what we're seeing right now is people experimenting. But what you will see in 10 years is, or 5 years or 3 years, is full-fledged products that look nothing like what we have today.
It is quite interesting because, when I think about the traditional role of the cartographer or GIS, it's an interesting mix, because on the one hand, we want our map to be completely factual. Right, it's supposed to be an accurate representation of what exists on the ground, particularly depending on the use case. But someone in municipal government, it has the boundaries or whatever, and these are used kind of in legal situations, so it needs to be correct. On the other hand, we have the role of the cartographer kind of as the artist, making it beautiful and nice to look at, or even if it's not artistic, it's at least like a good usability and understandability. And I think that combination, those two, the factual plus the artistic, is what makes it such a challenge. You know, it's too easy to go too much in one direction or the other. And the people who get it right, that's the core skill, right? That they can find the balance. And it's not clear to me AI, at least in the ways we've seen it so far, can find that balance, right? Either it can go completely in the artistic direction, but it's not factually correct, but, you know, has the minor errors or whatever, or the other way where it's completely factually correct, but it lacks kind of the, you know, it's robotic kind of. So it does, it really remains to be seen what happens there. So.
No, I think you're right, and I think what you're striking at too with the factualness and the artistic side, I think that's also what we should celebrate more about being in a GIS world, because it's inherently visual. It's inherently, and it's to me sometimes it's a different way to communicate. I think you can communicate incredibly efficiently with maps. There's so many stories that you can tell without using a single word if you make a beautiful map. And I think we sometimes forget how many maps we have around us because we become kind of desensitized to them. Like, for example, the COVID maps or the Ukraine maps, or even if you're watching the local, if you're watching the weather reports, anything. There's so many maps around and they tell stories without us even thinking about it. And I think that's powerful.
Very cool. Well, so what's next? Now you guys just announced this fundraising. So what does that mean for Atlas? I assume you're going to be hiring a few more people, or what can we expect? What does the next year or two hold?
You can expect a lot of rapid product development. You can expect us to hire more people. You can expect us to go into different directions. You will expect us to be creative and do things that haven't been done before, really, without the GIS space. We really think that we will have to explore quite a bit, and the product will evolve a lot. There will be a lot of new things that will come in that just haven't been done before in GIS, I think. And we just really, really want to make maps more accessible, because we just, another thing that we see is there's so much data that's geospatial that's not being used for creating maps or doing anything geospatial, just because many people don't know how to use it. Like retail companies, I think they vastly underuse their data. Even real estate companies that actually use a lot of GIS data, I think vastly underuses it. And just making that possible, I think is, I think that's really important for us.
It's a good point. Actually, I was speaking with someone at a recent event, and he had an interesting observation that in the last 20 years, we consume many more maps now, right? Everyone now is always looking at maps on their phone. Yeah. And whereas it used to be previously, you had some big paper map that you had to fold up or whatever, and maybe you only got it out when you went on a big car trip or whatever. Now people are on their maps, looking at maps all the time. So the consumption of maps has grown significantly, but what hasn't grown is the creation of maps.
Yeah, exactly.
And sometimes, you know, you see totally, it's very bad attempts, like literally people screenshotting Google Maps and then, like, you know, in Photoshop drawing an arrow on it or something. And you see with this rise in consumption, there should be a commensurate demand for an increase in creation. So I think tools like yours are definitely needed. And one thing I'm excited about is all the different interfaces and ways and all the different people kind of taking different with different takes on how this can happen and different use cases. And you know, as I said, you know, people on a desktop, people on mobile creating a map, people sharing maps with your friends, sharing maps in a work environment, all kinds of different contexts, and thus also different needs as what type of map would be appropriate or not appropriate and things like that. So
yes, I really agree. And I think I've been so happy in the past couple of years to see how many new mapping initiatives that have been showing up from all over the world. I think there's so many cool new companies that are being started right now that we're super excited about. And even like, say, MapLibre is becoming really good. And sometimes I'm just like really surprised about how it's insane to me, like how passionate people are in the Geo community. And that's what made me like very happy coming into it. Because this January, actually, I was in New York just visiting a couple of friends, and I decided to meet up with some Geo enthusiasts there, and I met with a guy called Kyle Barron, and he is writing, basically rewriting GDAL in Rust. And I'm like, you are crazy, because that is the biggest project I've seen. But he's so passionate about it because it matters to him. And I'm like, I can't appreciate these people enough. Like, to me, he's a GIS hero. And I think we're very fortunate that we have people like that in our industry. And not only him, but there's plenty of those. And that makes me so happy, to be honest.
Well, Harold, you're going to have to come along to a GeoMob event and you'll see. Yes, yeah. That these are the kind of people who we attract, and there are some actual proper freaks, and we love them. We love them. It's exciting. So, hopefully you and your colleagues will be able to make it to a GeoMob event. Unfortunately, we don't have GeoMob in Norway yet. So, but who knows? Maybe at some point in the future. Can you give us, while we have you, can give us any kind of overview of the Norwegian geospatial scene Norwegian tech scene? Where are you based exactly in Norway, and what's going on there?
We're in Oslo, right by right in the center.
Okay.
So it's super convenient, very easy for people to get to the office. It's perfect. We have our own little loft where, you know, we can create kind of the startup vibe that we want to create. But I think the geospatial community in Norway is great, and that's also very another interesting aspect, I think, is that it's mostly data based. So it's based upon us having great data.
Mm.
So we have the local, what's it called, the government road agency. They deliver fantastic data.
Okay.
We have fantastic DEM data, so like for making contour maps and everything. And the wildlife is incredibly well mapped. So you'll find all this incredible data. And that's kind of like the resource you as a map maker need to even be able to make a map in the first place, right?
Right.
So, I think you have all,
I have. I have had the pleasure of visiting Norway. Unfortunately, it's been a while now, but there's definitely no shortage of geography in Norway. Very, very beautiful country, and I have to get up there again at some point.
You should
company.
Come, you should come visit us. You should come by our office. I'll have you anytime.
At my company, we do work with several Norwegian companies, some very interesting ones. Do you know this company, No Fences? Have you heard of this? No Fences.
Yeah.
So that they are one of our customers, and I've been meaning to get them here on the podcast as well, actually, to talk about the work that they do. But Well, fantastic, Harold. Congrats to you and your colleagues on the funding, and good luck. And I encourage all listeners to, you know, take a peek at the site and check it out. Of course, we'll have it linked in the show notes, and they can dive in and give it a play and send you their feedback. What beyond just visiting the site, what is the best way for people to get in touch with you?
The best way is to check us out on add me on LinkedIn and other social sites. I try to put out cool maps or cool articles or cool findings that I have, and share with people. So connect with me on LinkedIn, and connect with my co-founders on LinkedIn, and you'll get to see some really cool content.
Very cool. Appreciate you coming on the show, Harold. Good luck. Bye.
Thank you so much for having me. Bye.
Thanks for joining us today on the GeoMob podcast. We hope you enjoyed the discussion. You can get the show notes over on the website, which is at thegeomob.com. And while you're there, you can sign up for our monthly newsletter and find links to our accounts on Mastodon and LinkedIn, so that you can stay up to date on all our upcoming events. We hope to see you at an event soon.